Hi there, I'm Amy Griffiths and I'm one of the journalists in Manx Radio's newsroom and you're listening to Newscast.
Jamie Baldwin from Austin. Just firmed up our commitment to provide power to the island, and what we've put forward is two realistic and options to provide that power to the island. One is through a direct connection from the wind farm to back to the island and ongoing onshore works to connect to the Manx Utilities substation. And the second option is a long-term power purchase agreement. So the generation would come back through the existing Manx 1 interconnector, and in broad terms we would use the money for the Island Link to provide cheaper wholesale electricity to the island. So the 10 to 15% discount on electricity bills is effectively based on that, and what that cost really across the 35-year period would be equivalent to about a third of the current demand on the island for free. And then when you consider that typically around a third of a householder's bill is the wholesale cost of electricity, it's simply a kind of a third of a demand for free and a third of that bill being the wholesale cost. So that's why we've estimated around 10 to 15%. It's something we put on the table and discussing actively with government. It's a voluntary opportunity, but we absolutely recognise the need to provide benefits to all on the island. So that's why we put these two options and made that firm commitment to do one of those.
And I think that's the thing, because that's been one of the key concerns, I think, for a lot of people about this project, is that we'd have this massive wind farm right on our doorstep and then not actually get to see any of the benefits of it. So is this a way of trying to address those concerns?
Yes, I think we've been clear that we've always wanted to do that, and I think it's partly been tricky because of the ongoing kind of election coming up. But I also was talking about this earlier. If we'd have done all that work before the consenting process, I think we would have got kind of accused of it being a done deal. So it is evolving, but we just want to be really clear with last week's press release that we have put this on the table and we're committed to those discussions and delivering benefits to the island through either of those mechanisms or potentially a combination of those. But that is something that we need to discuss directly with both Manx Utilities and government.
And of course, this is a proposed scheme, and as you say, there's a lot of moving parts to it, a lot still to be decided. So, you know, how can you confidently work out that 10 to 15% reduction in electricity bills?
Yeah, sure. There's certainly assumptions around that. It's based on our current proposals that are before the examiners. But we know anyone can kind of see what the wholesale cost of electricity is and compare that to what they actually pay on the bill. We've got an estimated cost of around £100 million for delivering the Island Link. So that's the basis on what we're using. There is clearly some range and variables in that, but it's in our view, a reasonable estimate, and it's based on actual kind of figures that we've looked at. And actually, when we look at the economic benefits to the island as opposed to the kind of energy benefits, and that's the benefit to the Treasury effectively, we've also been public around, we believe that to be approximately £2 billion over 35 years, and that's something that we've been clear about since August last year. This is our estimate. The Treasury's own economic advisory team have broadly supported that estimate, but that also is based on kind of variables. We believe it or not, quite early on in the stage here, we haven't got our consent as we're going through that process, but there's quite a few steps following that. So it's based on some assumptions. What I would say is we're actually doing a piece of work with a third-party consultancy to independently kind of verify some of that modelling behind that works, and we will be submitting that into the examination in July to provide more confidence, because I do accept that it's one thing taking our word or even government's Treasury's word for this, so we're trying to add some confidence, but it is we can't be sharing the kind of confidential commercial information around how we financially model all our kind of wind farms, but so it's trying to get that balance right.
And you know, you mentioned the potential £2 billion of revenue. You mentioned the, you know, the 10-15% reduction in bills. All of that sounds brilliant on paper, but there are obviously still so many moving parts with this scheme. And at the end of the day, there's no provider even that's been negotiated or agreed. So how is Orsted in a position to be able to make these kind of estimations and this kind of commitment almost?
I guess it's based on a combination of our experiences before, but as I say, it is based on, you know, looking at, some, for instance, and we've shared some of this publicly, we expect the cost of building Morvannon, should we go ahead, should it get consent, to be around £4.5 billion to £5 billion. That's the construction cost. We know we're assuming a 35-year operational period. We're basing, as I say, on our current proposal, the 87 turbines and the capacity, so we can work out the expected generation. So, and then we've got various assumptions around kind of tax rates and also kind of annual seabed lease payments that. And so we're using all that information, and that is what is given us confidence in being able to kind of estimate, as we see it today, around £2 billion over 35 years. And as I say, that is something we are now getting a kind of a third party to kind of verify. And maybe they'll come up with a different figure or a range. But we've, yeah, it's important that we can be as clear as and transparent as we can be. And I think we are doing as much as we can without kind of giving all our other competitors in other markets a lot of information about the company.
And I think it's fair to say that this project has been a controversial one for residents here on the Isle of Man. And by releasing these kind of figures, is that a way to try and placate the naysayers as such, if you like, and try and generate more public support towards the project?
I don't think it's about placating naysayers. I totally recognise, and it's totally understandable, some of the concerns raised. This is a big decision. I don't think we've kind of shied away from that. I accept that, and I understand that this is also would be the first kind of big renewables project on the island. So it's totally understandable people have questions and concerns. I think what's important, and one of the reasons we want to be clear, is twofold really. One is that the government's policy has supported the economic case for an offshore wind project, primarily to export to the UK. As I say, we believe, and this is voluntary, I should be clear, that there needs to be clearly a benefit to the island other than the economic benefit to the Treasury. So it's with that in mind, this is what our application is supported by, the government policy around offshore wind and the economic case. But I also think it's really important to say, to see this as an opportunity, as well as to consider the impacts, particularly the visual impacts, and that is essentially what the examiners are doing. Because this opportunity is, I genuinely think it is kind of once in a generation. I don't think it will come around in the same form. And if you look across the Irish Sea, if you look at the UK, and there was a similar offshore wind farm, actually slightly bigger in terms of scale than Morvannon, right on the Manx territorial waters. That's got consent, that could be built, and the Isle of Man will not get any direct financial benefit at all. So this Morvannon is this opportunity. And if it's not taken, I understand why it might not be, but then I would ask people to say, well, what's the alternative? What's the plan? And key to that is, who's going to pay for that? We are putting forward proposals that we will develop, we will pay, we take the risk, and we pay for the construction, the development, and the decommissioning. And I'm not sure there's anything else on the table that would provide that for the island.
And earlier in the interview, you did mention that there is a general election coming up. One thing that's been quite a talking point, I think, has been the letter from the Attorney General to potential candidates, essentially warning that by talking about this particular project in the run-up to the election, that it might end up being a conflict of interest for them should they be elected. And have you found that that's put Orsted in a bit of a tricky position as well? Is that something that has, yeah, been a bit of a challenge for you as well?
Well, we haven't. I mean, we haven't been speaking to ministers at all about the project since we submitted the application, and that's right. It is an independent process from that. I think the timing is unfortunate in terms of with the general election and the timing of the application. And we did originally put this application in March 2025, and unfortunately it was delayed. And so with that, I think we always felt there was a risk that this could happen. I understand why government have said that. They want to keep that conflict to minimise the possibility of that. I don't think it directly affects us, but I do understand why people on the island are frustrated by that. So I do recognise that, and it's probably quite difficult for me to comment on the kind of political element to that, but certainly it is important that the examination that we're going through is open, transparent, and is kind of removed from the politics as much as possible.
Because that's the thing, is that, you know, we are now firmly in election period, and this is, whether candidates choose to comment on it or not, one of the key issues for people on the doorstep as well, isn't it? So, again, is that something that you'd hope to avoid, I suppose?
I don't think we can avoid it. People are going to ask those questions. And as I said, I totally understand why they would. I think what's important is we try and put the facts out there on both sides. And we've been quite clear in our application that there is a significant change, particularly on the visual impact. We that is what our own assessment concluded. We've been open about that. We recognise that that's the case, but we also need to be clear about what the potential upsides are and the benefits to the island. And I think that is what the examiners are currently kind of considering, and it's also what ultimately, when after the election, when this a recommendation comes from the examiners, and when it sits with the Council of Ministers, they need to consider it in the whole, and they need to consider the both sides of the coin, I guess. It's a big decision, but it's also, as I say, it's a real opportunity as well. And to be clear, although this is new for the island and it's seen as a kind of significant change if it were to go ahead, as I say, it's happening elsewhere, and I think there is an underlying kind of, not concern, but that there is a sense of, as I said earlier, is what's the alternative if this doesn't go ahead? And I think that is a question that should be considered by politicians at the time it comes to taking the decision.
And of course, one thing that an election brings is a new administration. And how is Orsted going to handle? Because obviously, you say you haven't spoken to any of the ministers as such, but presumably you've been having lots of conversations with politicians and briefings and talking about the scheme. And are you going to have to essentially do all that work again with a set of new incumbents if that's what ends up happening?
I mean, honestly, we haven't had those conversations directly with politicians since we put the application in. I certainly haven't. We are sending information, and we've got the website, and we've put the information as well as the application on there about the kind of facts around the project and the opportunity around the project. So yes, we've done that, but we haven't had kind of direct discussions with ministers. Certainly, we have with government departments and effectively the civil service, and we are, as I mentioned, the Energy Strategy Board, particularly around the two options that we've put in. Bringing power back to the island. We are having discussions at that level, but not at ministerial level.
And we talked a little bit about the review that is currently ongoing. When are we envisioning a kind of result from that review and some tangible things that to work with from that?
Sorry, do you mean the examination?
Yeah.
So the examination, it's a six-month process, so that ends on the 9th of September, so we're, I think, just over halfway through. We've got one more week of hearings planned in mid-July, and a number of deadlines. So that will end on the 9th of September. I'd be very surprised if that's kind of reduced or extended. There's then, I think it's about 12 weeks or just under 3 months for the examiners, so the four examiners that formed the examination panel, to write up their recommendation. And that will then go to the Council of Ministers, or certainly to Cabinet Office, and then it's up to the Council of Ministers to read that and to debate that and to take a decision. We won't see that. So that's the process. I think we probably expect a decision probably early in the new year if the process runs on time, but let's see.
So we talked a little bit about the £2 billion, and that's from mainly taxation and rent, I think, presumably, isn't it? But are there any other opportunities for, I suppose, the island to see a benefit from the scheme?
Yeah, sure. Yes, there are. We would be, if this goes ahead, we'd be looking to have an operation and maintenance base. That's a commitment we've made on the island. So there's jobs there. Both during the construction and also at the 35-year long-term direct Isle of Man paid jobs. And also with that kind of opportunities for the local supply chain to get involved with providing kit for that O&M base and also for potentially for the turbines. Everything from kind of even handrails around the turbines need replacing in some of the sea conditions, particularly we see in the Irish Sea. So there's real opportunities, and we've seen it in the UK West. We've seen a lot of, I think it's about 250 local companies within 10 miles of our base, our O&M base there in Barrow. So there's real opportunities there. We've also got a community investment fund, which is a separate commitment to, obviously, to the economic benefits in Power to the Island. And that is £1.5 million a year for 15 years and is broadly the same as the entire kind of national lottery for the Isle of Man Fund. So that's a substantial amount of money for the island. So, yeah, lots of other opportunities. We're also working on the kind of biosphere element and biodiversity, so we're working with kind of stakeholders to deliver kind of positive net impact from the project. So, yeah, there's plenty other than just the pure economic benefits. Back to the Treasury.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.